Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, we have the latest on which cruise line consistently has the cleanest ships, and TSA workers will miss their first paycheck in the latest government shutdown this week. How will that impact your airport experience? Those stories and more next in the news.
In our Smarter Traveler segment, we'll tell you how you can join the 5 million people who are in the queue for tickets to the Olympic Games. But hey, your chances are as good as theirs. Details on how you can make it happen at 11:20.
Southwest Airlines has made some big changes, and not everything is going hunky-dory. At 11:35, we take a look at what's happening and share the CEO's promise to make some immediate changes and what those changes might be.
Travel's getting more and more expensive, yet there are more visitors in all the popular places. Where's the breaking point when it comes to the cost of fulfilling your travel dreams? More on the high cost of travel and how to fight back at 11:50.
Thanks for making time for us today, whether you're listening live on Sactown Sports or on our podcast. Welcome to the latest edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Popping everywhere, man.
Jamaica.
Seattle.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome everyone to a beautiful Saturday morning, a little after 11 o'clock. Tom Romano and Mark Hoffman with you. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Boy, Mark, this is some pretty nice weather to wake up after all that we've had recently. It's one of those days. Well, do I turn the air on? Open the windows? Certainly no heat.
If you want to travel and be entertained, just walk outside your door and enjoy the outside. My goodness, there's barely a whisper of wind. My heat didn't come on last night for the first time of all winter, you know? So that was a sign we're transitioning, and all the people who have allergies are all sniffling and, you know, having a hard time of it. Good week. Here at Sports Leisure Vacations, we had our big show at the California Automobile Museum.
Yeah, that was the 24th, just a few days ago. Yeah. Tell us about the event, the Route 66.
It went really well. We had John Pageant, who is the official videographer for the Route 66 Centennial Project. I think he has completed doing all of his filming now. I take that back. He said he had a couple places when the weather warmed up that they needed to go back to, but sometime this fall, it will premiere in movie theaters in Los Angeles and Chicago, and then in historic theaters along the route, which will be cool because there are several of those that have been fixed up and the like. And we had such a good turnout, and things went so well that John came to me between programs, between the second and third program Tuesday, and said, hey, you know, why don't we try to get a premiere, a showing of this movie here in Sacramento? And sure, he said, you have people who are interested in the, we had about 400 people for the three different programs. We had one for KVIE's Legacy Circle, which is all the people who have put public broadcasting in their will, if you will. And then we had a Sports Leisure Vacation show in the middle of the day. And then we had they sold tickets and had almost 200 people to an evening show with hors d'oeuvres and the like. And so John Pageant did a great job. He told lots of great stories, had some clips from his old films. And in fact, we were able to pull together for the last show a clip from his new film. And if you like old highways and that type of stuff, then you're going to really love this. But hopefully it will be able to be shown here sometime in November is when it's going to come out. November is when the actual 100th anniversary of Route 66 occurs. It's when the guys got together in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and made it officially a highway and decided to move forward. So Route 66 is in its 100th year, and it was a lot of fun to see and talk about some of my old friends along the highway, because John shares the same passion for the road as I do.
Imagine you saw a lot of familiar faces that you visit when you go on the trip, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And the sad thing is that, you know, every time you look at one of those old videos, there's one of the people who are in it who are not on the planet anymore.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, that's just the natural progression of life. But people often say, you know, what's your favorite place to go to, or what's, you know, in all the years that you've been doing this? And I have to say that there's nothing I enjoy more, or there's no place where I have more friends than out on that old highway. And when we started talking about the 99-year-old barber in Seligman, Arizona, who was the first guy to really fight to save the old highway 30 years ago, Angel Delgadillo, it was hard to keep a straight face, because there are some really special people out there. They're just regular people. They're just regular people.
Yeah.
They didn't plan on being famous or well-known or anything like that. It just sort of happened. So to me, that's sort of the purest form of tourism. So I can't wait to get out there. It'll just be about a month and a half. We'll be on the eastern side of Route 66. And I promise that we are going to do a centennial program here as soon as I can get back home from my travels and get my act together.
All right. Sounds good. By the way, you're listening to the Travel Guys, and at the top of each Travel Guy radio program, we bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And with today's edition of the Travel News, once again, Mark Hoffman.
Did you see the story, Tom, about the stowaway? The lady who several years ago got caught coming to the United States, stowed away on a plane, got put on probation, all of these things. Last week, apparently, tried again.
She's back.
Yeah, tried to go to Italy. And she was taken into custody Thursday.
It was on her bucket list.
Yeah, I guess so. So if at first you don't succeed, try again. At least she had her 10 minutes of fame. Hey, listen, there is the latest report on cruise ship cleanliness is out. And for those of you who do cruising, I think this is a pretty important thing. You're going out into the ocean on a big boat with a whole bunch of people, hundreds or thousands or whatever type of cruise that you've chosen. And of course, there are, you know, some people to people cleanliness issues and things like that.
Yep.
So I would think, I'm not a big cruise guy, but I would think that if you're a cruise person, you'd be looking for the ships that are the cleanest. So here is the latest data. This was pulled together by travel insurance site Squaremouth, but it shows some differences. Now, the scores are all fairly high, which is good, but there are some differences. Viking is the number one ship when it comes to sanitation scores, 98.75. The lowest at around 95 is Carnival. Now, Carnival is the parent company of not only Carnival, but Princess, Holland America, Seabourn, Cunard, Costa, P&O Cruises. So they have quite a wide spread. But top to bottom, it's Viking, Virgin, Norwegian, Disney, Royal Caribbean, and Carnival is at the bottom. Carnival is about 2 points below everybody else. So what this kind of tells me is that Viking ships are the cleanest. They are also childless. That could have something to do with it, because, cleaning up after kids is you're a grandpa, you know about this. Cleaning up after little kids is a full-time job, probably even medium-sized kids. So that could have something to do with the fact that Viking is at the top. But anyway, Viking has the cleanest ships, according to this survey, and Carnival and their brands, not to say that their ships are dirty, but they scored the lowest in this particular survey. So anyhow, let's see, what else have we got here? War broke out in the Middle East this week. Joe Brancatelli is already online talking to folks about how, if you have any travel plans, obviously, to any country surrounding that region, or you're traveling on any airline that is based in that region. Maybe you're using a connecting flight someplace once you get overseas. Joe just said, you know, everything is in complete chaos right now. Regional flights have stopped flying, so you may want to check on things if you have any, heaven forbid, that you would have any travel plan to that part of the planet. But if you do, make sure that you do your homework before you go. This is kind of a cool story. This came from the Las Vegas airport last week. Somebody left a beautiful little golden doodle dog, just tied him up inside the Las Vegas airport and walked away to the departure gate. An officer saw this lady do it and walked up to her and said, you know, are you, what's the deal with the dog? And she said, well, the airline won't allow her to fly with it, so she has to go, and she's just leaving the dog in the airport. Airline workers and police cared for the dog until Animal Protection Services took him to a shelter. And then a cool thing happened. The officer who originally saw the dog get abandoned went to the shelter and got the dog. And took the dog home. So they have nicknamed the dog after the airline where it was abandoned. So the dog's name is JetBlue.
Well, all right. Good.
Las Vegas police officer has the dog in his home now. And so that story at least has a happy ending. Uber is buying a Chicago-based parking app. And when asked about it, they said, well, you know, if you're not going to ride in our car and you're going to ride in your own, why then we need to figure out a way to make money off of that too. So Uber has bought a Chicago-based parking app. Let's see, what else have we got here? American Airlines has jacked up the price of the second bag. If you're traveling and you take two suitcases with you, you're going to pay $5 more unless you pay for the service online. Part of the increasing effort to, we don't want you to need to interact with a human at the airport. And if you cannot interact with a human, we'll bribe you. We'll give you $5 if you don't need to talk to us.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, kind of a strange way to approach things. All right, speaking of strange ways to approach things, this is something that is not on anybody's radar right now, but it could get on your radar really quickly. We're talking about the partial government shutdown that is impacting TSA officers across the country. Basically, it's FEMA and TSA. Most of the other agencies, their budgets were already settled, so this shutdown is really fairly targeted. We're now at the end of the second week of the shutdown. I didn't see a single story in the news last week, Tom, that referenced that they were talking about this or, you know, some kind of settlement was imminent. This obviously, with everything else that's going on, and now with what's happening in Iraq over the weekend, this has fallen off of everybody's radar screen, except for one group of people. That would be the TSA workers themselves, who if you've been to the airport and you've seen the TSA workers, tell me that they don't look a whole lot like you and I. They don't look like people who live in big mansions or drive, you know, Corvette cars or anything like that. They're regular folks. They have bills to pay. They have rent and childcare and car payments and groceries and all that stuff. And so for the second time now, in a matter of months, we are putting them in a horror. I mean, imagine that you have to go to your landlord and say, I don't have any way to pay my rent. I work for the TSA, and we're not getting a paycheck, but we're supposed to get one eventually, and I will pay you when I get my check. And this could go on for a while. So
especially since it doesn't seem to be on anybody's radar.
No.
And except for the TSA, I'm guessing that if it starts to be a situation where people don't come to work for the TSA, and there's or I don't know what you would call it, a strike or a no-show, and it starts affecting people's travel in a major way, perhaps that'll get somebody's attention.
Well, and it's not just necessarily, if you're a TSA worker, it's not, well, I'm not going to go to work if they're not going to pay me. It's like, I'm not going to go to work because I got to figure out another place to work so I can have some money coming in so I can take care of my family. Mm-hmm. And this, it seems to me so unfair that the people that the TSA workers would be the people who would have to bear the brunt of this. It just seems so unfair. And you're right. The way this will end, mark my words, the way this will end is it'll go on for a couple more weeks, maybe another pay period. And then the TSA people are going to start not showing up at work in greater numbers. And when that happens, you know, they've already eliminated the congressional air escorts through the airport. You know, those folks, when they go to the airport, they go to a special desk and they're whisked through security. So that's all over. Global services is shut down. So that means all of the bigwigs who travel and pay for global entry, that's all shut down. So they threatened to shut down PreCheck last week, just hours after we got off the air. And within a few hours, it was reversed. But I suppose that could happen, too.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because that came up early on that they were going to eliminate that, and so it's still on.
Yeah, PreCheck is still open at this point, and of course, some people have pointed out online that hey, if you want to slow down the line, stop the services for the people who get through the fastest. That's the best way to slow down the line. So when you eliminate global entry, those people whiz right through because they're already been vetted. And it's just a matter of showing their paperwork, getting scanned, and they're in. So I don't know. But I'm going to tell you that this is going to get ugly for some travelers. You're going to go to an airport. People are going to go to an airport one day that's been hit by call-ins, and then it's going to be a problem. And then that when that happens, especially if it happens to a congressperson or two, then I think we will see some movement on this. But until that happens, we're probably not going to see anything. And that is just, I don't know. I just, to make people off the street take the brunt of the fact that people in the government can't get their act together, that's just wrong. I don't care which side that you play for. I don't see TSA people with signs that say Republican or Democrat. They're just out there trying to do their job and get you on your way. So anyway, that's my rant for today. The airline reporting commission, the folks that keep track of how many airline tickets are sold, say 2026 is off to a flying start. 7% more tickets were sold in January of 2026 than were sold in 2025. The Frontier Airlines CEO, despite turning back planes and making his company smaller, says he's committed to this, to his strategy, and that Frontier Airlines will survive. We'll see about Spirit, but anyways, I would be really, really careful with either one of those airlines buying a ticket way in advance at this point. I've said that before on the program, but I would put Frontier in the same category as Spirit. Somebody is not going to survive, and we will know, I think, fairly soon. And speaking of airlines and airports, if you've made it through the Seattle airport any time in the last couple of years, you know that that has been a construction mess, especially on the departures level. It is all done. This press release says Seattle, Tacoma, and Alaska Airlines celebrate completion of the transformational SeaTac Gateway project. That's a whole lot of words just to say we're finally done with all of the construction. So we won't be able to say that in Sacramento for a while because we still have a pretty big project going on there. But anyways, that is your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. Check us out at travelguysradio.com. You got any dinner plans for tonight, my friends? Well, may I recommend Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House. Just the name itself is very mystique. It's a cute little place just off of Highway 50 in Hazel. This time of the year, it's nice and cozy. And yes, Mark?
Yeah, I had dinner there last night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, took two buddies who are both celebrating have birthdays within a couple days of each other, old classmates, and they're both turning 30 years old this week. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Turning 30 years old? I don't.
A long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. And so we went to dinner there last night. Can I just say, man, the food, the service, and the people at Rudy's is just, remember how service used to be at almost every restaurant? It's still that way at Rudy's. I mean, we had a wonderful dinner. Let's see what was served at our table. Lobster ravioli, halibut, and a steak. So we were kind of all over the board.
Very good.
And the people there are so friendly. And, you know, they don't know that I'm a travel guy or that I'm, you know, supposed to be. You know, I just go in and we just sit down and have dinner. And it was, the service is just so good there. And man, the food is just, it's excellent. I mean, it's just, if you have a special event coming up, you know, you're going to take mom out for, you know, a birthday, or your parents out for an anniversary or something like that, you could do no better than to make a reservation at Rudy's. Sorry, I didn't mean to get so verbose there.
But. No, I think that's perfect. All right. That says it all, my friends. Once again, Rudy's Hideaway, easy to find just off of Highway 50 at Hazel. And I do believe that if you walk in and say, I would like to get the Travel Guy Special, you can get that 6-ounce lobster tail with some add-ons for just $29.95. So, again, tell them Mark and Tom sent you. Rudy's Hideaway, Highway 50 in Hazel. Okay, next up on the Travel Guys, our Smarter Travelers segment. We're going to tell you, if you'd like to go to the Olympics, it could be in the cards for you. We'll tell you how when we return right here with the Travel Guys. Hey there, Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, with you every Saturday at 11 a.m. right here on Sactown Sports 1140. Welcome back, Anthony Lucas. Had a little mini vacation, joining us back on radio. Anthony said that, Mark, he had a fabulous vacation babysitting his sister's 5-month-old. Now, what kind of guy is that, huh?
Well, I don't know, but that's something you can put on his resume, because if it's a 5-month-old, that means that your time is pretty much covered with diaper training, I would think. So so I would say any man who's willing to volunteer for that moves up on the list a few notches.
There you go.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Olympics being in Los Angeles in just a couple of years. The 2028 Olympics, the Winter Games just concluded, and they have opened up a ticket draw for this. People like you and I, Tom, can send in our names. We have a link at travelguysradio.com. Very simple. You can just go there and click on it, and you can fill out the little form. It'll put you will join 5 million people who have already registered to try to get tickets, including a million and a half in the first 24 hours it was open.
Any idea of the 5 million, and there will be more millions that are going to sign up, when it comes down to the wire, how many tickets are they going to make available?
Oh, that is such a good question.
You know, is there going to be a million or so?
Yeah, this is really a long press release here, and it doesn't give any of that information. It just says that once you register for a draw, the first draw is going to be the deadline to register for this first draw is March the 18th, so a couple of weeks. And people who live in Los Angeles are being given a little bit of an edge. So their first ticket drop comes up a little bit before it does for everybody else. But the first, if your name is drawn, they'll assign you a time slot the second week of April, and that's when they will contact everyone. And you'll have if you're lucky enough to get drawn, you can apply for a maximum of 12 tickets across any sport. So the way I read this is, you know, you could get 4 tickets for a baseball game and 4 tickets for something else and 4 tickets for something else, or 12 tickets for all for one event, depending on what is available when your name comes up. So they're going to do this, and then there will be subsequent draws where they will go through the same process. People will be given a slot, and when your name comes up, you can pick from whatever is still available and get some tickets to the Olympics that way. No ticket prices are mentioned anywhere on this release.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, you know, I think people that are going to go to the Olympics will maybe make a decision when the time comes if they get drawn as to what the price is, but... I'm just hoping it's just not some sort of ridiculous amount. I have a lot of friends and family, for that matter, who've already signed up and quite excited about that opportunity. Of course, everybody's looking at you and going, "Hey, Mark, you're gonna get a busload of tickets, aren't you? Aren't you gonna take us?"
Yeah, and the answer to that is no. It's specifically set up so that people like me can't go in and hoard tickets or purchase a bunch of them, so I'd have to get tickets on the secondary market. What I'm going to tell people, though, is that you live in Sacramento. There are, I mean, between Los Angeles and Burbank and Orange County, We won't count Ontario because it's a little bit out in the valley and Palm Springs. But those three airports down there, we have what? Probably 30 round trips a day from here down to those airports. And the reason that's significant is because hotels are going to be expensive for the Olympics and rental cars and things like that. But you live in Sacramento, so you can effectively shave a night off the front end and shave a night off the back end. You could go and spend the better part of 4 days in Los Angeles and only have to have a couple nights hotel room, because you could fly down in the morning and do events all day long and spend, you know, a couple of nights and then do events all day long and fly home. So that would cut your costs considerably. So that's something for people who live here on the West Coast and have frequent Los Angeles round trip airline departures. That's something that would perhaps help you formulate a plan. I can see somebody out there right now going, yeah, maybe I could do this and still afford to do it. I mean, hypothetically, if you got some tickets, you could fly down in the morning, go to some event, and fly down and fly back at night. So you could go to the Olympics. And so I just mentioned that. Get your wheels to start turning there. First thing you want to do, even if you're just partially thinking that you might want to be interested in going to an Olympic event, go online, travelguysradio.com. There's a link there, and you can fill this out. Listen, if your name comes up and you don't want tickets, I'm sure you'll be able to find somebody who would be happy to take them off your hands. So just register for the heck of it if you're a traveler or if you want to be an Olympic ticket broker. Just get your name on the list.
Yeah. Hey, you can drive down for the Olympics. You'll have your car there.
There
you
go.
If you so chose, you know.
See, now already the wheels are turning background here of how you could make this happen for a reasonable amount. And of course, there are, you know, things people are going to say, well, what about the opening ceremonies and the closing ceremonies and stuff like that? Well, those are bigger tickets, but they have indicated on here that there will be some availability, at least in this first draw, for those events. So who knows? You might get lucky. And going to the Olympics, I have never been there, but talking to people who have been say that it's really talking to some folks who were at the Winter Olympics and just got back this past week said, gosh, it was just really, you know, there's a lot of people and there's a lot of waiting in line and stuff like that. But it really was cool to be a part of a worldwide event like that.
On a similar but different subject we'll have to check into later, I understand that some of the Olympic events are not even going to be in L.A. or, for that matter, California.
That's correct. That's correct. Oklahoma City, it looks like. There are going to be a few Olympic events. Yeah.
Why not? That's close to California. Yeah. All right. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. You know, Southwest Airlines has made some pretty big changes, and not everything is going hunky-dory. We'll tell you of what's going on when we return right here with the Travel Guys.
We're going places with that sports leisure flair, a world of adventure, and we take you there.
Twice a year, those of us at Sports Leisure Vacations roll out new tours for our travelers, and one of those rollouts is coming up very soon. The day before Easter, the first Saturday in April, will be our spring and holiday preview day. Registration for that will open on Wednesday of this coming week, so you can give us a call at Sports Leisure Vacations. The program will be held at the KVIE studios on a Saturday. There'll be morning and afternoon sessions. If you've got an hour and a half to come by, you can find out all about what's going on at Sports Leisure Vacations. Why is it important to be there early? Because our trips are pretty popular and they sell out pretty quickly. So get your name on the list for tour preview day at Sports Leisure Vacations. The reservations open up this Wednesday at 9 a.m.
And there you go. We are Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. It's a nice looking set. I don't know what I'm going to do with this day. This is so beautiful.
It's perfect. I mean, except that there's not a lot of sunshine, but, you know.
Well, it's gotten a little hazy just right now. But you know what? I had some landscaping thing that I need to do. It's one of those ones where you got to get out on your hands and knees and pull out some unfriendly volunteer strawberry plants.
I
suppose this is as good a day as any. So anyway,
sounds like you've been assigned the honeydew list for today.
Yeah, you find me in the backyard, kind of crumpled up, laying in a pile of leaves, probably.
That conjures up a really sad image.
I know. Okay, So, you know, I've seen it. I've tried to book it and so forth. And I don't know. Is it really that hard with the changes that Southwest has made, Mark? I mean, they're just like everybody else.
Yeah, and you'd think that would be, well, they're just like everybody else, so you're used to how everybody else flies. So why wouldn't that work? Well, I think this is part of the problem, is that the people who fly Southwest, especially here in Sacramento, acknowledging again that Southwest has more departures than everybody else combined. Plus, Southwest will take you nonstop to a whole lot of places that other places will require you to connect to. Places like Eugene and Palm Springs and things where you have to go through San Francisco or Los Angeles. It's going to take 4 or 5 hours to get there. And Southwest gets you there in an hour and a half. So they've got a nonstop to Nashville, one to St. Louis, one to Kansas City in the warm weather months. So there are, if you're a flyer from Sacramento and you're trying to get there in the most efficient manner, frequently the answer is Southwest. But the people who flew Southwest in, let's call it the old Southwest, were generally very loyal to the airline, and they didn't mind what was known as the cattle call boarding. Those were people who were okay with that. So now you change the system, and for all the folks who wouldn't fly Southwest before because they couldn't get an assigned seat, they're like, okay, great, we're on board with this. But for the people who liked the system at Southwest, this has been quite disruptive. And so it's, you know, they were married to that system, and now there's no system to be married to anymore, and they're not very happy about it. And that's a little bit of a problem. Tom, you and I are old enough to remember. You remember about, oh gosh, it was like early 80s, I think. Coke decided that they were going to change their formula and change the taste of their soft drink. It was going to be New Coke. And they spent a tremendous amount of money and on advertising and promotion and rolled out this wonderful new taste product with a new taste. And you know what happened to all the people who remember this?
Oh, sure.
All the people who liked old Coke, they didn't like new Coke.
No. And they tried all kinds of variations on it. Coke Light.
Yes.
Coke with a background of lemon flavor. Mm-hmm. And
Total bomb. And the Coke people, to their credit, were smart enough a few weeks/months into this. This has been a long time ago. But they said, wait, you know, we wait a minute, stop, we screwed this up, let's go back to where we came from and we'll figure this out in a different way, shape or form.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. Probably save themselves a tremendous number of customers who were like, you know, this is icky and I'm going to go drink something else. And they were responsive. They realized that they had done something wrong. So that's where the Southwest people are right now. I'm looking at a headline that was sent to me during the week, says Southwest Airlines faces its new Coke moment.
Yeah, well, the question is there any chance, and I don't think there's any chance in hell, that Southwest will do what Coke did and go back to the original formula. I can't imagine that Southwest is going to say, you know what, forget this. We're going back to the old cattle call thing. We're going to go back to how it was. Your thoughts?
Not going to happen.
Not a chance.
Not going to happen. You know why? It's not because there aren't people within the Southwest system who would still buy into that. And of course, their old customers would love it. But here's the deal. There is way too much money to be made selling seating assignments and checked baggage. And Southwest didn't do that. And so those were revenue sources that people who own stock in their company said, hey, wait a minute. These other guys are making all this money by doing this stuff, and you're not doing this. Remember, we've told listeners to this program that airlines no longer make but a pittance off, if they're lucky, off of the airfare that you pay to fly on the airplane. They're making their money off of the seat assignment that you bought, the bag that you checked, and the credit card that you used to pay for it. That's the business model for airlines these days. And I'm not being critical. I mean, businesses models change, and where you make your money changes. You know, grocery stores sell you lots of things that they make little or no money on so that you will come into the store and buy something that they make money on. So this is not a new concept, but the Southwest folks have never had to deal with this before.
You know, the first thing I started noticing is the fares with Southwest have dramatically gone up. You know, you're not going to get those $49 flights to Burbank, except for one in the early mornings or the middle of the night. So I'm seeing that, you know, as the prices go up, is Southwest still historically still a little costing a little less?
I'm seeing
people going to be switching to United or other airlines that fly to their destinations. Are they going to be competitive?
Excellent question. We, as at Sports Leisure Vacations, as a tour operator, we are consistently blocking 20, 30, 40 seats for, well, not 40, 20, 30 seats for groups of people that are flying to a particular destination on a particular flight on a particular day. So, yeah, we have a pretty good gauge for airfares here. Are they higher than they used to be? Yes. Is Southwest consistently lower than the others? Yes. Are they consistently a lot lower than the others? No. No. Southwest fares have become very much in line. And here's something that I've noticed as a business traveler. A couple of times recently, I've needed to buy a Southwest ticket within, let's say, 2 weeks of departure. And it used to be that based on availability on the aircraft, you know, if they had a lot of seats left to sell, then on that particular flight, the fare was still, you know, $89, whereas on the other flights of the day, it was $249. That's not happening anymore. The fares have gone up across the board, and the opportunity of snaring, at least for me, of snaring a low Southwest fare at the last minute, that appears to be gone. They are pricing 14-day and 7-day and probably 3-day fares based on what their competitors are asking, as opposed to based on what the availability might be on that particular airplane. So it's going to be interesting to see. Now, here is what the Southwest people are saying that they're going to do about the particular this situation. This all seems a little weird to me, but one of the problems they're having is that people getting on board and there's not enough overhead space. Of course, we've talked about how you get that done. You just at the counter, the gate agents just don't let people pass them with things that are not legal carry-ons, and then you'll have plenty of room. But they're not doing that yet. And so you're running out of overhead space on the airplanes. And so Southwest is going to have dedicated space for people who bought up. You know, if you paid up to what the Southwest equivalent of Economy Plus, then they're going to try to make sure that when you get on the plane that there is space for your suitcase, because after all, you've paid more money. So let the great unwashed in the back fight it out over the space in the back. But we're going to try to. They're also going to put in the overhead bins. United did this a few years ago on most of their planes. They're bins that are much bigger, and they allow bags to be set on their side instead of on their front or their back. So that allows you to get 5 suitcases into a bin that maybe used to hold 3, and will hypothetically get you way more check-on, carry-on bags on board. So that's Southwest's answer right now, is that they're going to try to increase the overhead luggage space, which is going to take months, if not a year or two, to go through their entire fleet and do all of that. So I see this as a nothing burger. It kind of feels to me like, yeah, Southwest is like, hey, we know there are problems. We're going to fix it. We're going to fix it. But there's no real meat in what they're talking about here. So if you're flying Southwest and you get on board and you say, well, this is screwed, you're probably right. And they're still trying to figure it all out themselves. And again, it should be easy. You know, it's just like everybody else does it. But it's all those people who fly Southwest, they're not used to the way that everybody else does it. And so this is going to take a little while. It indeed is, I think, Southwest new Coke moment, because since they're like everybody else, what incentive do you really have to fly them anymore? You know, the flight attendants are not fun. The you know, you've created an atmosphere on board that's the same as everybody else's. So I have no particular reason to fly Southwest, particularly if the fare is not lower.
Are you indicating, and I don't know this, to yes or no, you would, do some airlines have assigned luggage compartments?
Some airlines will police it, and as you're getting on board, they won't allow people who are sitting in the back of the plane to put their bags in the front of the plane until they get late in the boarding process and everything in the back is taken, And then it's like, okay, just grab a spot wherever you see a space for your bag, put it there. The problem comes when somebody who is seated in row 8 has no room for their bag and they have to put it back in row 16. Now it's impossible for them to get off that bag and get off the plane in any kind of a decent manner. Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to wait for people to get off and work their way back to where they can get their bag and stuff like that. Also, Southwest is having a problem with if you bought the cheap fare, you're getting a random ticket assignment at the airport and families are being consistently broken up. So and there are some real horror stories online of, you know, I brought my 4-year-old and I assumed that the 4-year-old would just get a seat next to me and it didn't happen. So now they're on the plane trying to bargain to get seats together, or, you know, they've got a little kid who's not sitting next to their parents, or heaven forbid you brought a couple of little kids. So the algorithms in the computers have got to be, I think, more recognizing. With United, when we do business with them, you've got the same last name. They generally don't separate you. Mm-hmm, so even if you didn't pay for an upgraded seat, Mr. and Mrs. Smith are going to have seats that are next to each other, as opposed to two middle seats 4 rows away. That's what's happening on Southwest. That wasn't really addressed in this press release they sent out, and that by far is their biggest problem. So right now, Southwest is not, this new system is not working out particularly well for everybody, and Southwest is not doing a good job of responding to it. That would be my take.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, then there are the parents that intentionally book their flights so that their 4-year-old is separated, gets to sit with the Winsels in the back of the plane while mom and dad are in first class. It just, and when asked about it, they will deny it, of course, but
yeah, I don't know what happened. The airline did something. All right.
Go ahead.
Well, we need to take a break here and come back. We're going to talk about travel being a little bit expensive and also about travel to Mexico, since that all got kind of hairy just after we got off the air last week.
Okay. All of that and more coming up next, right here with Mark and Tom, the Travel Guys. Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys here, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Remember now, a website where you can go and get the link to sign up to be in the queue to get those Olympic tickets at travelguysradio.com, as well as podcasts of all of our programs going back quite some time. And thanks to our friends at Bonneville and Sports 1140 for posting the Travel Guys podcasts on their website as well. All right, let's...
As long as you're on the thank you list there, I said this once before, but once again, I just want to say thanks to the folks from KVIE and the California Automobile Museum for helping to put on a great Route 66 special event last week. You know, the Automobile Museum, Tom, I hadn't been in there for, 10 years probably. They have got some really cool stuff in there. It's really neat. And they've got a big Route 66 exhibit right now that's going to be there for a few more months. Which, if you're wondering what all the excitement is about this old highway, go down to the State Automobile Museum down on Front Street, and you can see the exhibit. It's a really, really good exhibit. It's really well done. But the museum is just if you like cars, you know, then you haven't been there, then you owe yourself a trip to the California State Automobile Museum. It's really it's not just an afterthought. It's really a first class museum.
It is. It is top notch. Did you see the DeLorean?
Yes. Yes.
Hard to miss.
That was cool, too. And also, the people there are just really friendly and really nice. They have lots of docent volunteers and who have a lot of information that they can share with you. So it was just we were there all day. So it was a very positive experience. I would highly recommend it. Listen, a couple hours after we got off the air last week, a group of Sports Leisure travelers crossed the California border into Mexico. Actually, it was a couple hours before we got on the air, and then a couple hours after we got off the air, all hell broke loose in Mexico, particularly around Guadalajara and Puerto Vallarta. Things are much more stable there now. I'm looking at news reports from last night and this morning, indicates that hypothetically the worst is over there. I would probably still be a little guarded about the whole Puerto Vallarta thing. That seemed to be the hub of stuff. My group was headed into Baja California. So they were in an entirely separate region, and things there were much calmer. And you don't know stress until your group is just passed in. You've sent 20 people into a place where war has just broken out. But we decided, based on the information we had and our contact with local authorities, the chief of police came to the folks' hotel the second morning, third morning, and talked to them about what was going on in their area and about how they were on top of things, and that it was a safe that tourists were not fleeing. So the Baja area was reasonably safe. The rest of the main part of Mexico, that's something, you know, it's what is your risk tolerance? I mean, do you absolutely shy away from places, or it seems as though the Mexican police and military are on top of things, but there continue to be sporadic issues in and around Guadalajara and particularly Puerto Vallarta. And folks are saying, if you are going to Mexico or traveling in Mexico, travel during the day. Most of the issues on rural roads occur in the evening and at night when it's dark. Fly direct. Try to fly directly to the city that you're going to, as opposed to flying and then traveling, you know, on land for a hundred or a couple hundred of miles. Also, if you've got a Mexico trip scheduled, check your travel insurance. Make sure your policy covers civil unrest or terrorism, just in case things go south. A vacation shouldn't really be a test of your nerves. So Mexico, and to give you an idea, there are four levels of warnings from the State Department. Level four is do not go there, period. Mexico is right now at level two. Exercise increased caution overall. So that's a whole lot of I don't know that there's anything real clear there, but I think Baja California, at least for our group, proved to be much safer. And a group of mature sports leisure travelers with their tour director were down there for a week, and they have just crossed back over the border into the U.S. at Tijuana and San Diego. So so it was possible to have a good vacation. But it just depends on where you be at the time.
Well, there you go. Okay, one of the things we were going to hit on just briefly here before we wrap things up, and there may not be an answer to this question, but Mark, I mean, when does the cost of trying to fulfill your travel dreams become just too expensive?
You know, they talk about a K-shaped economy where, you know, the haves are doing much better than the have-nots, going kind of in two different directions. I would suggest to you the travel economy is the same way. People who can afford to go are going, and people who cannot afford to go are dreaming. And I think that we had a big group in the middle post-COVID who said, you know, I don't care what it costs. I've lost 3 years of travel, and I'm gonna make them up. And we are now past that. So people are making logical decisions on their travel needs and where they want to go based on the money that they have, and not, you know, some pie in the sky. I'm going, it doesn't make any difference. So that's starting to have some impact on demand some places. Also, the lack of international travelers, particularly Canadians, coming into the United States is having some impact on demand. Dare I say it will make domestic travel a little easier. International travel, hard to say. U.S., our folks are still going places. It remains to be seen how long we will be welcome visitors in all of these places. The whole Canadian thing is kind of amazing to me, that U.S. people are still going to Canada. Canadians are saying we're not coming there until XYZ happens. You can come here, and we know you're our friends, and come and spend your money, and it's all good. But places that go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the people in Canada, I mean, if they weren't pissed at us already after we beat them in the Olympics, they probably even more so not happy with Americans.
Well, if you look at, you know, we were talking a lot about Southwest. So it used to be you could get a round trip ticket to Southern California, San Diego, Phoenix, things like that on Southwest, $200. I mean, $100 each way would get you just about any flight. And so now you've got to, now the fare is a little bit more, but you've got to check a bag each way, hypothetically. So that's $40 each direction. And then if you don't want to get stuck in the back, now you're going to pay for a seat. So effectively, that $200 round trip has now become a $400 round trip. So I have to believe that that's going to impact some people's decisions of, hey, let's go to Los LA for the weekend, or let's go to San Diego, you know, or something like that.
Get yourself one of those Southwest cards and don't use it. Okay?
And don't use it?
Yeah, because the bottom line, if you have it, you get your bags free, along with eight people in your group. That's worth quite a bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't have to set it on fire, or you don't use it to death. But there you go. All right. It's a wrap for the travel guys. We'll be back next week at 11 a.m. Mark?
Remember to dance like nobody's watching. Thanks for your time. We'll see you next Saturday on the radio.